This is the Hollywood Outsider, a weekly movie and TV podcast with a new episode every Thursday. This is episode 149, and this week we are discussing upcoming releases including Hercules, and Lucy. We're going to spoiler-free reviews of Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, video games, the movie, as well as the new series The Strain and Extant. All right, from the outside in topic this week, action heroines in film and TV. I think that's going to be very interesting. The latest in movie and TV news, including our own trivia segments. My name is Aaron Peterson. With me today are my fellow hosts, Scotty Clark.
Greetings, Aaron.
Greetings, Scott. Justin McCumber.
You know, the only thing I think more fucked out than the Matt Damon is Hercules.
I'm sorry. It's there.
And you do both.
You're welcome. By the way, I haven't done Matt Damon in a long time. You guys have actually done it more trying to mock it than I have actually done.
You must have done in the past couple of
episodes. Every time you say his name,
I haven't done it actually in a lot.
Because we haven't talked about
him back. No, we've mentioned him a couple times, and you guys have done it. I have not. So really, you're the problem. At this point, you're the problem. And Brian Williams, I think, is here. I don't know if he's... Are you still here, or are you fucked out? Whatever that means.
Whatever. I'm looking up Urban Dictionary right now.
So am I. Oh, guys. Well, apparently we offended a lot of people last week with the show. So I hope we're all proud. I kind of am.
If you're not offending someone, you're just not doing your job.
Tammy said she almost threw up when we talked about the cream-filled donut scene. You're welcome. Sorry about that.
Hey, we said it was going to get dirty.
We did.
I mean, it was called Raunchy Hose.
It was.
Yes.
Several people complained about the name.
Yeah, y'all say y'all listen. Just, you know.
Well, that's reading, Brian. I know that's different where you are, but generally that's reading.
Did anybody write in and talk about how much they loved the raunchiness?
Yes. Numerous people. They loved the quotes, and we sounded like we were having fun. Those are the people we're making the show for. So
That's right.
There you go.
If you're offended by a little, you know, dog semen donut talk, frankly, you just shouldn't be listening.
And maybe we didn't need to refresh their memory so soon. We are, Justin and I are going to be talking to S.S. Wilson. Should be up next week, I believe, who is the writer of Tremors, the creator of Tremors. We're going to settle that longstanding debate. And he also wrote Short Circuits. We're going to talk about his career and some other stuff. That should be a really interesting interview. And I am going to be at Comic-Con, and I want to tell everybody, if you happen to be wandering around, I will be there. So if anyone listening, if you want to say hi, I would love to say hi to you. Just give the whole line a call, 818-814-6246, and I'll try to meet up with you, and we'll high-five. Well,
just give them your personal number, then they can text you. Right?
Slow down. I got to meet you first.
Just message me on Facebook, y'all. I'll give it to you.
We've all got his number. Yeah.
He will. They all will.
Fair warning, bring your own condoms. Just saying.
Wow, Scott.
Why? Because he never has his own.
He never has his own.
And rape kit, apparently.
Buy one of my books. I'll make sure and send you his phone number.
That's all it takes? $10? You're in?
Yep.
Wow.
Yep, I'm cheap.
You're an easy sell. Okay, Universal, which they've kind of done this in the past. I don't really know if this counts, but they are looking to combine their universe of monster movies into one cohesive universe. Kind of like, I guess, the Avengers are doing, where it's all the same world. I think this is fantastic. And I know somebody mentioned that it was kind of similar to Van Helsing, only without the Van Helsing. Was that you? Okay.
Yeah.
Do you like this?
Well, I mean, haven't they in the past, didn't they already do movies that had Dracula and Frankenstein?
The classics,
Or Frankenstein and the Wolfman. So it's kind of been done already a little bit. But if they're looking to, you know, I don't know, are they rebooting Dracula or something?
The vibe I got from it was that they're talking about overlapping the movies. Mm-hmm. So kind of they're all being tied in together. Whereas, you had your Dracula or Frankenstein meets the Wolfman type movies, but I think those were just kind of one shots.
But I mean, are they going to make a new Dracula and a new Frankenstein and a new, you know, werewolf movie that they're then in sequels going to bring some of these characters together? Do we actually know how they're planning to do it?
I think that's still in the early stages, but they're talking like a Marvel world where the movies, like, you'll have Dracula movie, you'll have Wolfman movie, but they will be in the same basic layout, and they might be able to cross over. You might get Wolfman popping up in Dracula and so on and so forth.
Hmm. And they're starting out in 2016, so stuff's moving pretty quick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think this is fantastic. I'm very interested to see where it goes.
Yeah, me too.
Christopher Nolan recently, and this is about a week ago or so, but he had an idea that the future of film is promising. I want to know what you thought about what he had to say.
Well, yeah, I mean, a lot of what he gets to talking about is a bit speculative about where cinema may be going in the future. But he says that whether photochemical or video-based, a film can now look or sound like anything. It's unthinkable that extraordinary new work won't emerge from such an open structure. That's the part I can't wait for. The film industry has gone through a lot of changes, in it all. You know, every time new technology develops, it'll continue to change. I think the advent of a lot of easier video on demand and downloading has changed the way movies are being distributed. And he talks a little bit about that as well in this article, where some movies, you know, if they don't make enough of a splash, say their opening night, then, you know, the next day these movies could be out of a theater, replaced by a better performing movie. And that I don't really care for so much. I hate the idea that if a movie doesn't just kill on its opening day, or maybe they'll give it an opening weekend, if it just doesn't make huge numbers, then they're going to yank it and put in something else that has proven to earn money. It's like we as a culture have just decided that if I'm not wowed immediately, it's worthless. And that's not the way art should be appreciated or looked at or treated, really. Sometimes things need to breathe a little bit. How many movies don't find their audience in the movie theaters, but do through word of mouth on, you know, video on demand or on DVD? You know, those movies may have made more money in the theaters if they had been left to be in the theaters a little bit longer. Hell, Equilibrium. I saw it in theaters, and I think I saw it the one day it was in, because the next day it was gone. So we do need a little more patience with films, but I do like that he's very optimistic about, with, you know, digital recording being able to look like film and film still being out there and used by some people to make movies.
Well, hang on. Before you go to that, let's go back to the point you were just talking about. Video on demand has really picked up. Mm-hmm. I mean, Snowpiercer was just released on video on demand, and that actually was like number one.
I bought it, and it's awesome.
Yeah. And now that gives people the opportunity, this is partly what he's talking about, people the opportunity to experience films that maybe they would not see otherwise. Maybe they didn't have the opportunity. It's not coming to their town. They live, you know, Brian.
Hey, I definitely fall in that category.
And that's not like a redneck joke, like a lame redneck joke. He actually lives in the middle of nowhere, really. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess that kind of makes you redneck. I'm sorry, man. If you live in Georgia and you're middle of nowhere and you probably got people in your basement, you're redneck.
That pretty much is the definition. The impression. No, but seriously, to your point, it literally is a minimum of a 2-hour drive for me to get to an IMAX theater or something or at least a theater that maybe has some of the smaller released movies that wouldn't normally come here. Mm-hmm. So. You're right. I mean, this is and the video on demand, I also bought it and watched it. So I was thankful for that.
The vibe I got from reading this article, or the comparison that I brought to mind, was music and radio. The impression that I got from him was that only things that are going to be put on the forefront are going to be popular. Things that are reviewed well are going to be popular. Like, people always blame radio for why crappy music is so popular, because you're basically dictating to people what they're going to like and what they're going to find is good. That's what I got. Like he's saying, the only things that are going to make money, obviously, are the ones that are in the theaters. And I think we're getting away from that with the video on demand, kind of like you're talking about. Where
I don't think he's saying that the well-reviewed thing. I mean, maybe I'm reading it wrong, but I don't, because honestly, most movies that make huge make huge revenues the opening weekend and whatnot are not the best reviewed.
Oh, maybe I misread it. I just the flavor I got from walking away from
Justin
that article.
I think what Justin's saying is like if it's not an instant success,
mm-hmm.
financial success, not critical success, not financial, right, Justin? Is that kind of?
Yeah, I mean, theaters could care less what a critic thinks. They care more about what the public is going to go see.
Yeah.
Right.
And what was the other part? I'm sorry when I cut you off. I just wanted to hit that point where you were there.
That's okay. I mean, one of the other things he talked about is, you know, that there's a possibility that movie theaters could become a more – how was it he phrased it? I was actually trying to look for his specific words, but – the gist of it was that a movie experience, going to a theater would be more of an event thing and less of a, how we kind of view going to the movies today, which is, you know, you go to see any and every type of movie, you know, whether it's a romantic comedy, an adventure movie, or a documentary, they're all there. But perhaps in the future, the theaters will be there for the huge releases, mm-hmm. you know, your Avengers or Star Wars or whatever, whereas a lot of other films that could have limped through a theater may just go, you know, right to video on demand, which has kind of changed perspective. Remember back in the day when straight to video was, you know, a term for a movie being crappy?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
Now that's kind of not the case because a lot of movies do go straight to video on demand, but they didn't do it because it's a half-assed effort or it's a bad film. It's just because there's no distributor for it, or it's a small movie that really doesn't need a theatrical run, and so they save money by not going through that whole process. So it looked, you know, that whole straight to video connotation I think is wearing off a little bit, and it doesn't quite have the negative stigma that it used to. But you know, it could be that movie theaters in the future are more of not a boutique, but a specialized event moment, and then your average films will just, you know, go right to your home. But the future, who knows what new technology is going to come down the pipe and change all of even what his predictions are. But that's what he's kind of had to say.
I kind of believe him, honestly. I see it more and more. So we'll end up seeing in a few years if that pans out. But I mean, the guy knows the audience that he's catering to. And I think he knows people that love movies and they look at trends, you know, daily. So I'm sure they see a lot of us moving that direction.
Well, and last week, you know, we were talking about how some of, I think it was AMC theaters were putting in like recliner type seats.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that seems like it's an indicator that we are indeed moving to where going to a theater may become a more expensive proposition, but it's also more of an, you're going there for a special event type film, as opposed to, you know, you're just going to go see, I don't think, like a Man 2 in a big old fatty recliner. Those theaters will probably be saved for bigger films. Who knows?
Well, you got to love Slow News Week because, you know, it's the week before Comic-Con, which means there's nothing hitting the internet because everybody's saving it so they can have their big special reveals or whatever. But we can talk about whatever we want. Now, Brian, you love pretty pictures, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's your favorite thing. It's what you like.
Yep.
Small character pieces. Ain't got time for that.
Whatever.
Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, by a lot of accounts, really raises the bar for special effects. I agree with that. I don't know if you do or not.
Yep.
But do you think we're at a time where we can have more CGI characters that actually move us as opposed to the Jar Jar Binks of the past?
Oh, totally. You know, with the way that they're doing this motion capture stuff, where basically they've got a guy in a suit that's doing all the acting. He's just got when you watch him on TV or the big screen, you know, he's got a different character over him. I mean, you're kind of, it's picking up everything though. And I think the key part of this is picking up the facial cues, the recognition, you know, the smiles,
the emotions,
sad eyes, the emotions, all that stuff. And I think that's a huge, you know, aspect in that. So I totally. And that was one of the things with the Apes movie was I really found myself connected to a lot of these characters. And it wasn't just because, oh, the monkey got hurt, you know, it was, you know, caring about the character itself.
Yeah, they took leaps and bounds. And if they can do this going forward with other digital characters, you know, like take Avatar. I have no problem with Avatar. It's not one of my favorite movies. I just think it's okay. But I know other people love it. But I think if you had the animation that's in this one, in Avatar, which I'm sure Cameron already has. I'm sure he had it before they ever got it. And once they employ that in this kind of film, I think that'll just raise the bar and take it to another level. I think we're seeing more and more of that, where special effects are creating performances. But basically, all they have to do is just slap a skin over the actor's face.
Well, I think the difference between a movie like Avatar and Dawn of the Planet of the Apes is that those that were not in the forefront, like the human characters in Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, outside of Andy Serkis, you probably don't recognize a lot of those actors by name. You mentioned the guy that plays Koba. I didn't know who that actor was. I think that makes it more interesting, because it's going to make the actors that you recognize their names by their faces all of a sudden have to kind of work harder to get better jobs. You know what I'm saying? It's making me think of like back in the day with like car manufacturers that were always worried that the robots that were going to be building the cars were going to take their jobs, that kind of thing. So these actors with the pretty faces and the good acting chops are like, well, these guys that are doing more vocal acting, more
motion capture
kind of acting are going to get their jobs, kind of thing. You know what I'm saying?
I think we'll always need the pretty faces.
Well, yeah,
you know, to a degree, but
part of my thinking on this is that the reason we haven't had a lot of CGI characters that maybe touched us emotionally in the past was because the people creating these films weren't creating CGI characters that needed it. Mm-hmm. Usually CGI was, you know, for animals or aliens or something,
robots.
Right, exactly. Something that, you know, a human couldn't do, or a human with makeup would maybe have been too tough to do. But I remember watching Peter Jackson's King Kong and just really being touched multiple times by the expressions on Kong's face and the way that he interacted with his world. So I don't think it's really a matter of CGI resolution or crispness or its fidelity. It's a matter of people creating characters for CGI that actually have emotion, doing that more. I mean, not to bring up a hated subject on this show, but there was a game last year, The Last of Us, that it was, you know, it's just the CGI characters, but their performances, it was the most emotionally involving piece of artistic media that I had, I think, enjoyed that year. It really touched me in ways that very few films or TV shows or even books do, but it was because of the performances that they were, you know, giving, not because they looked spectacular, which they really didn't. But it's the actors behind it. And that's why even though CGI would become more and more prevalent, you still need talented people to give those characters voice and to give them animation. And so you're always going to need good, talented actors to give those characters the heft they need to carry that emotion.
Right, and to your point, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes had the benefit of the CGI characters being apes, which have a lot of similarities to humans and have some human mm-hmm. characteristics in their body shape and their facial expressions, that kind of thing. So that had right. that going for it too.
Right.
Well, I think if you take it in context and you look at, yes, it resonates because there are similarities between humans and apes and whatnot. But I also think the technology period is, and King Kong was great. I'm not debating that at all. But it is leaps and bounds better now than it was then. And even that was impressive. This is near phenomenal, because I literally could not tell numerous times. I actually believed this was a talking ape mm-hmm. throughout the movie.
Right.
And that doesn't happen, especially to my, you know, movie warped brain, you know, which everything I'm looking at is special effects and that I can see that. The effects are so well done at this point in Hollywood that you're right, Justin, with the right people behind the camera, the right story and the right time, I think anything could actually be put on screen and be given the same emotional resonance as a human character.
Mm-hmm. But what we're going to have to do though, is that these CGI artists are going to have to get to the point where they've gone past that uncanny valley and where they can now create human looking characters that are so convincing, we believe they're human. It's easier to do that when you're creating a chimpanzee to make us believe it's a chimpanzee, because it doesn't have all those familiar human tics that we all know that creates the uncanny valley. You can believe a chimp, even though it's CGI, is real, easier. And so that's working for them. But once they are able to make human CGI characters that are as convincing as an actual person, I think then you're going to see this really explode with these kinds of characters and their emotional resonance with audiences.
Well, if they get there, then you can kiss the pretty people goodbye.
Well, and even
Beowulf wasn't convincing enough.
Oh, Lord, man.
Well, and looking even further down the line, our current technology is tied down to that being a motion captured way to do it. Think like, you know, 30 years down the line when they can do that without the mocap. You know, they've got the technology where they can make it look that good without having the
30 years, I'd be peeing myself, but you're right. Absolutely.
Well, yeah.
I think at some point.
But that's because you'll have Alzheimer's.
Jeez, I'm ahead of schedule.
Well, that's because you drink too much.
That's true. I have no idea what's next in technology, but man, it continues to be more. Every year, I think, well, then I don't know when they're going to be able to do this on film, when they're going to be able to do that. And every year they do it. They find a way to take that next step.
I constantly feel like I'm saying, oh, well, it's never going to look better than that. And then they always prove me wrong.
I'm just glad I'm at a point, you know, it's been a while since I watched something. You just have to, don't you?
I do. Fuck it. It's knee jerk. Go.
It has been quite a long time since I have been in a movie where I felt like, wow, this is changing cinema as I sit here. Mm-hmm. And this is like one of those moments. Let's go into, you know, some Russell Crowe and Ryan Gosling action. Ryan Gosling is literally Brian's favorite actor of all time.
And I'm going to go take a dump. Excuse me.
Well, what do you think, Scott, about Russell Crowe teaming up with Ryan Gosling in a cop film directed by Shane Black?
Well, that smells a lot like Lethal Weapon, and there's a reason for that, considering he wrote the script for the original film. I don't know. The story, like, one cop is a recovering alcoholic, the other is a practicing alcoholic. Yeah.
So he likes to drink.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
They're investigating the suicide of a porn star whose aunt claims she saw the girl alive after the incident was made public. I don't know, man. I feel about cop dramas the way I feel about World War II movies. Is there got to be something really special? And at this point, it's...
Porn is not special to you.
No.
Hey, so let me show you a couple clips.
The most attractive thing about this movie is that pairing, and then it's just because it seems like an odd pairing to me. Russell Crowe and Ryan Gosling together
I think it sounds great.
It seems off to me, but that's what I'm saying. It sounds good because it doesn't seem comfortable to me. So what do you guys think?
Well, I thought Russell Crowe and Mark Wahlberg was going to be a good pairing also, but that didn't turn out so well.
I did not think that. I did not think that. Russell Crowe's a great actor when he has the right material. When he doesn't have the right material, he just looks like he needs to go on a diet. Ryan Gosling, he just smolders a lot. But I've seen him in movies where I know he has talent. It's just he just got locked into this doing the same thing over and over. And I'm hoping, you know, pairing him with Russell Crowe and then a script and direction with Shane Black, who's known for witty banter and great dialogue. I think this is a fantastic idea. I love it. Apparently I'm the only one.
Yeah, I think it sounds fine. Russell Crowe is. He's very hit or miss. And when he hits, it's fantastic. But when he misses, it's just a bloody mess. And I don't know. I like Ryan Gosling as an actor. But having the two of them being... one thing I don't think of when I think of either of them is humorous.
Yeah.
But giving them Shane Black to write and direct them may actually give them a little more range in what they do. Because Russell Crowe, all he does is seem to just glower. You know, everywhere he looks, it's just he looks upset. Let's give him something funny to do, something funny to say.
And
maybe
he can.
He's too old for this shit.
If you saw, there's a movie he did called, I think it was A Good Year. It was like a Ridley Scott movie. And it was a much lighter movie. He did very well with it. Challenge the guy. I think he can do it. Because Mel Gibson was not funny before he did Lethal Weapon. So he was just, you know, it was Mad Max. He was very dour and depressing.
He was mad.
Yeah. I mean,
he says so.
Turns out he was always mad. He just kept it down for a while. But my boy, this is just a mention. Kurt Russell's been making the rounds, and he said Hateful Eight is supposed to start filming early next year, which we said was probably going to happen. So I just want to say we called it. of high.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to I think Quentin Tarantino, through Django Unchained, really showed that he's got a flair for Westerns, and to have him do another one looks really good. I mean, I want to see it. I think Kurt Russell was fantastic in Death Proof. For some reason, not a lot of people seem to like that movie or Planet Terror, but I liked it a lot, and I thought Kurt Russell was great. So having him in this seems great. Other rumored cast members, though, it's basically just a Tarantino list of stabled actors. You know, Samuel Jackson.
It's like the greatest hits.
Yeah, I mean, Michael Marsden, Walt Goggins, who was in Django Unchained and looks to be like he'll be in this, and Zoe Bell. Yeah. I really look forward to it. I love Tarantino.
Oh, speaking of Kurt Russell, I do want to say thank you to Paula, listener of the show. She sent me an autographed picture of Kurt Russell, and I'm still a little squeeing in my seat. So I want to thank you. That was very sweet of you. Thank you. So you're my official new best friend. Sorry, whoever was my old best friend.
Yeah, so glad I'm out of that spot. Welcome to Brian's Trailer Park. All right, to say Louis Zamperini lived a full life would not be doing him any justice. He was an Olympian, World War II hero, almost died in a plane crash in the Pacific Ocean. After said crash, he survived there for like 47 days, only to be rescued and spend the next almost 3 years in a Japanese prisoner of war camp. It's based on a book of the same title from Laura Hillenbrand. Unbroken brings us an inspiring life story of the indomitable human spirit. Now, Aaron, first, what did you think of the trailer? And second, should we just go ahead and pencil in, I don't know, maybe 4 Academy Awards right now?
See, I see it differently. When you know that this is based on a true story, and if you go look up the story, it's just, it's tragic and it's beautiful at the same time. I love the trailer. I think it shows a movie. Yes, I think it's Oscar bait and everything else, but I also think it seems like there's heart behind it. And I'm okay if it's Oscar bait, if it works. It's just most of the time it just feels like you're force feeding me. You know, like I'm just a freaking monkey at the zoo or whatever. Throw me peanuts. I think the trailer works. I was moved by when I read up on his story and I saw what he went through and the fact that it seems like they're bringing this to the screen. I look forward to seeing this. This is one of my most anticipated now.
Yeah, winter. When I first heard about this trailer, I went into it just really kind of dreading it. Because to me, Angelina Jolie, up to this point as a director, just always felt like trying a little too hard. Mm-hmm. And never really convinced me that she should be directing. And it's a movie about the triumph of the human spirit, just like Brian was saying. Fill it with all those lines that normally just have me retching over the, you know, next to me. Because it's so obviously Oscar bait and cloying. But that trailer was incredible.
Wasn't it?
It looks so good. I mean, so emotionally powerful. And I was so moved by that trailer that I had to completely abandon every thought I used to have about Jolie as a director and what this film might have been in lesser hands. But she looks like she has made one hell of a movie that may be one of those rare films that just kind of becomes timeless.
We need more of those. Everything's so dark anymore. My God, I need some upbeat stuff.
Somebody, I don't know, man. It's pretty dark.
Yeah, but the ultimate story is not. It's hopeful. Yeah, it's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
The guy actually, I mean, side note, the guy actually just died like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah. So, spoiler alert, he lives in the end. But.
Well, depends on when she ends the film, really.
Fair enough. Fair enough. We'll have to wait till Christmas Day to find out. But I mean, like you guys, I don't know if I've been this emotionally moved in a trailer. I was like, I saw this at the beginning of Planet of the Apes, and by like midway through it, I'm starting to well up for this, you know, like for this guy. I'm going, my God, this is crazy. Mm-hmm. It just felt like one of those, like you say, just one of those timeless movies that that's just going to be fantastic.
And you know what? When it says inspired by a true story, I almost always have to I have to look it up because I'm like, well, how much of it's a Hollywood story?
And inspired leaves a lot of
actually
creative
leeway. He just tripped near where they held people prisoner, and somehow that counts. I don't know.
He signed up for World War II, but his plane crashed in Iowa on his way to boot camp, so he didn't make it. You know.
Oh man! It looks like it has the right stuff. You get a clap just for coming up with that so quick, sir.
Wow. All right, well, Big Hero 6 is the new animated feature from Disney about a young genius from San Francisco who uncovers a dark plot that's going on in his city. He enlists his friends to form a band of heroes to figure out what's going on. Now, Scott, are you going to be taking your students on a field trip to see Big Hero 6?
Probably not taking my students, but I will definitely be going to check this one out. I was sold on this trailer, or I was sold on this movie when the teaser trailer came out, and it was just a little bit of information. It made me laugh out loud a lot. This one made me laugh out loud even more. I think it looks great, charming, just everything I want in an animated movie. I'm stoked. I think it looks hilarious.
What about it is appealing to you, besides that it looks
great? The kind of humor that they do. It's just that off-ball, goofy humor, like this robot that he's got that he's like trying to jam into his suit. Just seems kind of dumb a little bit, but in a cute way, not in a condescending kind of way. And in the trailer, like they bring him home and his battery's low and he just acts drunk or something. I just found it severely funny. It made me laugh a lot of times.
The scene with the pinholes really cracked me up.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
I actually laughed out loud. It dragged on for an uncomfortable amount of time.
I mean, it looks like it's going to have a great mix of over-the-top humor and then just so subtle little moments. It looks hysterical. I want to see this so bad.
Yeah, it looks really cute. Really good.
Really cute pairing of Western and Eastern.
Yes, there you go.
You know, designs and philosophies. It needs to come out like tomorrow.
Bring it!
Well, I'm sure it's not coincidentally, but it is based on a Marvel comic book. So
What? Not one that anybody knows of.
Not many, obviously.
Yeah, obviously.
But anyway, Big Hero 6 opens up November 7th. So check out these trailers and a lot more at thehollywoodoutsider.com. You can reach us a lot of different ways. The number Aaron mentioned earlier, that's 818-814-6246. Our email is feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. Go on to facebook.com/thehollywoodoutsider. Like us, message us, join the group. It's all laughs and skittles and stuff. So tweet us at @H_Outsider and get your I'm a Ho t-shirts at thehollywoodoutsider.com.
Stump the hoe.
Stump the hoe. Whenever we decide to do it, we have a trivia question where one hoe asks the other hoes and they see if they can stump them. Well, this week, one of our listeners, Scott Calcairo, I'm just going to keep changing his name.
Scotch.
Scotch Calcairo sent in a question for you guys, and he wants to see if he can stump you guys, all right?
Calcairo.
Calcairo. Awesome. I like that. It's catchy. Now, are you guys ready?
Mm-hmm.
Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Sure.
Here's his question. I ask a question. There's four choices they get to pick, and then we see if old Scotch can stump them. In the 1988 movie Scrooged, Bill Murray's network is screening a holiday special starring Lee Majors. What was the title of that special? Was it A, Why Did Santa Leave Us? B, The Night the Reindeer Died. C, It's a Jewish Christmas Story. D, Frosty's Night on the Run. Scott?
Wait, this is like when he's in the boardroom pitching it? Is that what you're talking about?
He's watching a special. They show it throughout the movie. All right, Brian?
What's the third one?
It's a Jewish Christmas Story.
Didn't you have a reindeer one or something?
That was B, yep. That was the second one. That wasn't the third one. You don't get like eight choices. Now, why did Santa leave us? The Night the Reindeer Died. It's a Jewish Christmas Story. Frosty's Night on the Run.
I'll go with B.
Okay. Justin?
Yeah, I'll go with B as well.
That was my guess as well.
Scott has no freaking idea. He's just following you guys.
No, that was going to be my guess, but...
Sure. It's B. Yeah, it's The Night the Reindeer Died.
Boom, yes. Calgon.
Calzono.
Calzone. Right. I like it.
In your face, stuff.
Boom. Yeah.
Boom.
Suck it.
Weak sauce.
Well, now we can go to the big screen now that we've blown that out of the water.
Right, I'm going to go hit the head. Y'all move on without me.
Justin didn't see the Planet of the Apes. He's got a thing against... Why don't you like the ape movies?
I don't care. It's not a franchise I've got any investment in. I didn't really care for the originals because I think I was just too young to, A, appreciate what they were, and B, get over the crappy head pieces. And two, I thought the first, you know, Rise of the Planet of the Apes kind of sucked.
What?
So I don't care to see. I've heard no end of good things about this. When it hits video on demand, I will watch it. But I'm not paying. I don't care about the apes.
You said, I'm going to watch it. Like you took your arm and you swiped it. You're like, I'll watch it, stupid people.
But until then, meh.
All right. Well, the other three of us did see it. Dawn of the Planet of the Apes takes place roughly a decade after the events in Rise of the Planet of the Apes, which I thought was a very good movie. James Franco is dead, which makes this one even better. And Caesar has built himself a little monkey...
One plus.
...has built himself a little monkey empire deep in the Redwoods near San Francisco. The simian flu, which basically started taking over at the end of Rise, has wiped out most of humanity, and they are desperate to survive. In order to restore the power to a small group of survivors, Malcolm and Dreyfus... played by Jason Clark and Gary Oldman, decide they need to repair a dam that happens to be right in the middle of Little Monkey America. So Caesar agrees to help them, but much to the chagrin of Caesar's son, Blue Eyes, and his second-in-command, Kobo, but he demands that they follow a bunch of rules that humans and apes apparently suck at following. War is imminent, but what happens may not necessarily unfold the way that you thought they would. The story is very simple, but there is so much character work and social commentary within it. It almost, to me, feels like an independent film masquerading as a blockbuster, I guess. So what about the story grabbed you, Brian? What worked for you?
Well, I like the fact that it's 10 years later. Civilization is kind of, you know, in pockets, little pockets here and there. And time's running out. They're held up in San Francisco. But look, they say, look, we've got maybe a couple of weeks or so till the lights go out. I just like the fact that, hey, we've got to get from here to point A to point B. And if we don't get there, we're screwed. Oh, by the way, there's a whole forest of apes that's
that's in our way.
That's talking and kind of blocking our way here. So and along with that, I love Caesar's role in this. I really liked that Caesar is really trying to kind of work with them against opposition from some of his trusted advisors, et cetera. And I like it was almost like world leaders meeting, trying to negotiate some sort of compromise and both giving a little. And I like that. It wasn't just me, ape, kill human, me, human, kill ape, bro.
Yeah. And it wasn't a whole lot of what I expected, which are the humans are going to screw everything up. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, so basically everybody, there are people on both sides, people and apes on both sides that screw everything up.
That's my favorite part of the story in this is I really felt conflicted as to which side to cheer for.
Yeah, so did I.
You know what I mean?
Like, I mean, you know to cheer for Caesar, but that's the only, and Jason Clark's character, Malcolm.
Right, but that's one character on each side. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about each side or
as a whole.
Like who do you cheer for? Do you cheer for the apes? Do you cheer for the humans? Because there were extremists on both sides, both good and bad. And I think to me, you mentioned social commentary earlier. To me, that was what struck home with me was that in any argument or debate or anything politically charged, whatever, there's like extremes on both sides and those don't dictate everybody. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And that was what really struck home because I was stuck. I had no idea who to cheer for. You wanted to cheer for both sides, but you also wanted bad things to happen both sides too, which
even as it progressed, because mm-hmm. I mean, there's moments where you kind of feel for each side of this conflict, and even Dreyfus, which people keep saying that Gary Oldman played it over the top. I didn't get that. I think his role is far too limited to really play over the top.
Yeah,
I don't even.
He was in it for a surprisingly low amount.
Yeah,
a
very small amount of time. And honestly, I understood his plight. You know, he made sense to me. I never found him to be a lunatic. I felt him to be somebody who was afraid mm-hmm. that they weren't going to be able to accomplish what they needed to survive, and he just wanted everybody to live.
You know, he realized that, hey, look, I've talked these people into being calm a few times now, that's starting to wear thin. This, my control as far as just telling them it's going to be okay is waning. I've got to show these people something, you know, but my frustration, I guess if I had it, it would be from the fucktard from Fringe.
Oh, the human that screws everything up on their end?
Yeah, because it's like, all right, you've got some, you're scared, you've got some biases, whatever, and you mess things up once, but he kept doing it over and over. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I would have shot you myself just to like, look, Caesar, here's a good outlook as a nature, you know, just a token of, you know, trust here. Let me take care of this for you.
Let me just shoot him in the temple. Bam. There you go. Taken care of. The story for me is, I mean, we've talked about that quite a bit, but for this film, the production and the acting kind of converge upon each other because the digital effects work directly with the performances like we talked about earlier. So what did you think in terms of the production and the acting, this combination of acting and CGI? Scott?
Well, with the combination of the CGI, it's just absolutely stunning. We mentioned this earlier in the show here that it was nearly impossible to tell the difference between CG and real life in this movie.
I'm convinced orangutans can read.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's one scene where, what's the big orange one? Is that an orangutan?
Yeah.
Where he's sitting there with one of the human characters.
Is that Marvin? I don't remember what his name was. It's something.
Maurice.
Maurice. There yeah. you go.
I thought it was Clyde.
Nice.
It looked like it was a guy in a suit. It really did. I mean, and if that was all digital, I sat there and was trying to decipher in my head. It's just incredible. But the amount of emotion that you get from each individual ape, like they do something distinctly different with each one so that you can tell which one is which just instantly by looking
at them. Yeah, that was the achievement to me, is being able to tell them apart. Because mm-hmm. normally in a film where it's this much CGI, I would lose count of all these monkeys running around.
Right. And
there's a lot of monkeys. A lot of monkeys.
I think where most of the human actors were more or less serviceable, the acting performances by those that were doing the mocap just stood out immensely. I assume you agree?
I do. I think they made the humans look weak. Mm-hmm. Like, I did not think going into the movie that I would think, and don't get me wrong, I think Andy Serkis is fantastic, and it's about time he got his due diligence. He's earned it. He's a wonderful actor, whether he's in front of the camera or behind it. But I did not think that Gary Oldman would be upstaged, mm-hmm. and Jason Clarke, who I think is a very good actor, would be upstaged by Kobo and Caesar the Apes. Right. I just did not see that, and they were. The emotion that Caesar has, like when his wife is ill at one point, and that's not a spoiler, it happens very early. But seeing the emotion that he's going through, the pain he's going through, his relationship with his son throughout the film, I found it much more emotional than the relationship with Malcolm and his son.
Yeah.
The human and his son. It just didn't work for me.
It felt more real.
Yeah, completely. Completely. So overall, I mean, what did you guys think? Matt Reeves, I thought, did a fantastic job directing. He is coming back for the next one. Are you guys happy about that now that you've seen this one?
Oh, absolutely. More of this, please.
Brian?
Yeah, totally. I was very pleased with this, but definitely welcome him back for the third one.
So what are your verdicts, Brian or Scott? You sound ready to go. What's your verdict?
This is one of those rare occasions where I went in with high expectations and came out happier than I thought I would be. Dawn of the Planet of the Apes is my favorite summer blockbuster movie of the year thus far. If 10 were the full price of admission, I'd easily give it a 9.
Brian?
I've got to agree with Scott. I'm giving it a 9. Transformers also got a 9, but for different reasons. This one, while by all accounts probably more CGI heavy than Transformers, it brought a lot more emotion. Mm-hmm. And there were so many times in this movie where I felt for one whether it was a person or an ape, it didn't matter. There was so much emotion in this movie, and I really enjoyed this. It blows the doors off the first, the James Franco one. I cannot wait till the next one comes out. I hope it's not another 3 years or whatever it was.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for this kind of for this level of special effects, I think you're going to have to, but
yeah, right. It's just,
I'm in the same boat. I guess we're getting nines across the board because Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, it was overhyped to the roof. Like I went in and, you know, just, and I get what Justin's saying. He's like, oh, this movie's being hyped. I don't care. You know, but I've heard about
Guardians of the Galaxy is being overhyped.
I agree with that. But this,
I got nothing against hype. It's just not a franchise I've got an affinity for. I don't know why that seems to make me a bad person.
I don't think it makes you a bad person.
And I'm saying that.
I think it makes you a horrible person.
Sarcastic.
It might be when you make the comments like, well, here's Planet of the Apes.
Well, fuck, people say the same thing about Star Wars.
They say
the same thing about Star Trek. Lost. You know, it's not my franchise. I'm not shitting on it. I'm not saying it's terrible. Well, the first film was not great. And I blame most of that on Franco.
Well, really, what can't you blame on Franco at this point in his career?
He should just stick to stoner comedies.
And General Hospital.
Right.
Well, to me, this was overhyped to the roof. But like Scott said, this is one of the rare occasions where the hype lived up to. This and Snowpiercer are like pleasant surprises because I was expecting great things and they both lived up to it.
I finally, we're hitting the summer that I wanted out of summer blockbuster season.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, it's been kind of a lull and a little bit, oh, they're okay, that's okay. Now we're getting into, wow. Now if Guardians can keep that up, maybe Hercules will keep it. You never know. We'll find out. Scott, you saw video games and movie. Tell us about it.
I did.
And please don't squee too loud.
I'll do my best. Video Games the Movie is a documentary about the history of video games and the culture that surrounds gaming. What's unique about this movie is that it's not designed merely for an audience of gamers, but also for those who may have never played a video game in their lives. It has a good mix of interviews with people in the industry as well as non-industry celebrities and even just good old gamers themselves to really explain what it means to be a gamer. Obviously, I'm a big fan of this. But I also found the movie, outside of it being about video games, to be produced with a lot of care. It was bookended beautifully with an intro that got me pumped and a finale that was actually quite clever and touching for me. And it's important when I talk about this that don't take my love for video games as the sole reason for loving this film. I've seen a lot of documentaries on the subject, and
I'll back you up on that. And we talked about it when you were talking about that interview. Scott has told me numerous times that, you know, this documentary, that documentary, and it just wasn't good. And he owned up to it. He's like, that's not what I want. He really wanted something that said, here's why I like it.
Right.
This explains why I'm such a freak about it. I mean, dedicated to it. You're welcome.
This is really the first one that captured the spirit of gaming, and I can't recommend it enough. If $10 were the full price of admission, I would easily pay $9.50.
It was very good. I'll admit, and I'm casual at best, and it was interesting all the way through. Justin, like, you're a big gamer too. I think you'll love it. I mean, the history it goes into, it does exclude PC gaming, which, you know, he focused on console gaming. I understand that. It was just so interesting, especially the very beginning. And I'll say this to defend Scott, at the very, very beginning of the movie, they really go through statistics as to what the current gamer models are, like what the current averages are, you know, how old people are, how many men there are, how many women there are, and just all those stats, which a lot of people know but don't really know, I think really do a wonder of explaining, hey, it's not for kids anymore, man.
Right.
Most of the people, you know, the responsible, respectable people, you know, that you think highly of, they play games.
Right. I also do have a written review that's on the site, as well as an interview we had with a director, Jeremy Sneed. Both are available on the website. Please check them out if you get a chance. And one other thing I do want to mention too, obviously, you guys know from listening to the show that I am a gamer. Don't get to talk about it too much on the show. A couple people have expressed interest have approached me about the possibility of doing a side project like on games, that kind of thing. I kind of want to get a feel for how our listeners feel about that. I'm thinking about starting like a Facebook page, kind of like an offshoot of the Ho page, if people are interested. If people would like to converse about games, I obviously can't do that on the Ho. So if you'd be interested in doing that, let me know. I might start something up.
Okay, that's Scott.
You should also let people know this movie is available on iTunes to buy and to rent. And I will be checking this out very shortly.
Is it to rent, too?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I thought it was just to buy. Nice.
Nope, both.
Check it out, then. Box office, Dawn of Apes monkeyed around with about $72.6 million this weekend. Transformers broke down another 56% to $16.3 million for a $208 million total. Tammy don't care what critics think, because she held strong at $12.5 million and $56 million total. And 22 Jump Street and How to Train Your Dragon 2 both brought in a little over $6 million for totals of $171 million and $152 million, respectively.
Damn, 22 Jump Street's gotten up to $171
yes,
million?
Yes, it has. Can you believe that?
Damn!
And I saw Tatum's, that one.
He's a draw.
Did you see that, Justin? I don't remember.
What?
Did you see 22 Jump Street?
No, not yet. I missed it in theaters. I'll have to catch it on.
It's still there. You can still go.
Oh, it's really funny.
Justin's like, I'm not going to, so shut up.
I don't go to comedies, man.
It's more Channing Tatum funny than Jonah Hill funny, but...
Absolutely. Channing Tatum's great in that movie.
Justin's upcoming attraction. All right, folks, we have three films we're going to be talking about this week. They're all opening up on July 25th. The first one... And So It Goes. This is a film directed by one of my favorite directors, Rob Reiner, and it stars Michael Douglas and Diane Keaton. A self-centered realtor enlists the help of his neighbor when he's suddenly left in charge of the granddaughter he never knew existed until his estranged son drops her off at his home. Scotty, what do you think about this one? You're the youngest of us, so it is a movie starring...
old people,
these older actors, old people, these older actors. Does it appeal to you at all, or do you think this is a movie that only the senior crowd will be going to?
I don't know about only the senior crowd. I felt like there wasn't a whole lot of a story, at least in the trailer. It seemed like the whole movie is centered around Michael Douglas being an a-hole, and that's it. So I don't really have a whole lot of interest, but
he does that well, though.
He does do it well
in the trailer, but I even like a movie like Bad Santa. Had somewhat of an interesting story to it, wrapped around a bunch of foul jokes and him being a total a-hole. But this one just seems like that's like the biggest part of it to me. And I don't know. It has nothing to do with the actors being older. I just don't have a lot of interest.
You know, my main concern is your main positive, Justin, is Rob Reiner. I love Rob Reiner, but the last few years, he hasn't really made anything that I can point to and say, that's Rob Reiner I remember from When Harry Met Sally. You know what I mean? I just feel like he's been struggling.
Yeah, I'm actually looking at his movie list on IMDb, and I kind of have to say the last movie on this list that I really, really, really enjoyed, shoot, maybe A Few Good Men. Has it been that long since he's made a movie that I really liked? Because, I love When Harry Met Sally, A Few Good Men. Misery was great. Of course, Princess Bride. He started off really strong.
He's just the last 10, 15, 20 years, man. Wow.
Yeah. That is kind of sad. But maybe on the plus side of it, it's written by Mark Andrus, who also wrote As Good As It Gets. And that's one really smartly written film. So
yeah, that is.
Maybe that'll help out somewhere in there. All right. Well, the next film on our list, Hercules.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I'm no Dwayne Johnson. This film, which is directed by
come on.
This is the only reason I'm not. Oh, I don't know. Brett Ratner has directed this.
Rush Hour 3.
Yeah, I've never heard of it. Starring Dwayne the Rock Johnson, Irina Shayak, John Hurt, Ian McShane, Rufus Sewell, one of Aaron's favorites.
Oh, goody.
And Joseph Fiennes. Having endured his legendary 12 labors, Hercules, the Greek demigod, has his life as a sword for hire tested when the king of Thrace and his daughter seek his aid in defeating a tyrannical warlord. Scotty, we already got you. Aaron, I don't think you're any more of a lover of Brett Ratner than I am.
Not much,
but I think you also like Dwayne Johnson almost as much as I do. Which of those bipolar directions are you going to be going?
Oh, so far the trailers haven't done a whole lot to
move
me. And I've said this I don't know how many times, but The Rock, I love you, The Rock, but you are just not a leading man that I have seen so far. Maybe The Rundown, but that was more of a buddy.
He's like a 1B.
Yeah, yeah. He's a great supporting character. Like, he will come in, own a scene, be gone for 15 minutes, come back and own it again. That's The Rock. The whole movie, here's kind of how I defend, take Brett Ratner out of it. the trailer, because I think the effects look fine. I'm sure that he's never been a director where I thought he was bad, just kind of bland.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, just very minimal effort, it seems. Yeah, like. it's just enough to be okay.
It feels like when he shoots a movie, he shoots it very static, and it's very, here's the camera, I'm just going to hold the camera up, and we're not getting an exciting shot, we're not going, you know, we're just holding the camera up, and we'll get some special effects in there. Boop, let's go to the next one. That's what I feel like with Brett Ratner. Hmm. And this is a movie where I need action, I need excitement, I need it to move. And there's the moment in the trailer when Dwayne Johnson screams, "I am Hercules," and I just don't buy it.
I'm wondering if that's one of those moments that in the movie really works, but in a trailer with zero context, it just plays off.
Do you feel the same way? Do you get what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I completely agree with you regarding the trailer and, yeah, that moment, which should be powerful, and it just kind of falls flat. But I'm hoping in the fuller context of the film that may be a better scene. But Brett Ratner is kind of one of those directors that I think of like Mick G. If it's got some action and some comedy, they're pretty good at what they're doing. Because, you know, he did do, what was that?
Rush Hour 1.
Yeah, Rush Hour, which was fantastic. I think he's actually got some ability, but this movie's got no comedy, not that I want any. And so I'm kind of wondering why Brett Ratner.
Brian, you're kind of a big mythological guy. Is this up your alley?
You're right. I mean, I am. I love these sword and sandal movies. I love The Rock. I like Ratner a little bit more than you guys. And all that being said, I'm really not even excited about this movie.
Not even a little bit, huh?
I want to be so bad. And there is something... I don't know. Maybe I just can't put my finger on it. I think his hair looks horrible in this. I think the fake beard thing is just distracting. It's got Rufus Sewell in it, so I know.
Yeah.
As much as I like, we talked about this a few weeks ago. I like him a lot. I think he is a good actor, but when he's in there, you know he's the villain. Doesn't matter how much mystery they draw up around him. You see him, he's like Mark Strong. You know he's the bad guy.
That's a good point. Mark Strong's a good one too.
And it's just, it just looks cookie cutter. It just, like, I want to like this so bad. It's almost, I hate to say, it's probably going to be Clash of the Titans.
Now, it doesn't look that bad. I don't think, yeah. I think this movie isn't trying enough to be as bad as those Titan movies that are just abysmally, should never even been made.
I'm hoping for the best. I really am.
Did you guys see the trailer before Dawn of the Planet of the Apes? I saw that.
No, I sure didn't.
I got slightly more excited about the movie after seeing that trailer because that was a new one for me. The previous ones seemed kind of bland. This one showed a lot more action. Not enough to, like, get pumped for it, but I was like, oh, that actually looks like it might not be too bad, but I'm kind of reserving judgment a little bit.
Hey, I've seen plenty of movies where the trailer wasn't that great. I didn't think the John Carter trailer was very good at all, and I liked the movie quite a bit, so.
Yeah.
It can happen.
Right.
That's, I hope, true, it, though. Everybody wants to root for The Rock. The guy is just, he's just a cool guy.
I do kind of wish, though, that Ridley Scott or somebody of his caliber was directing this movie.
Definitely, yes.
Or hell, maybe even Stephen Sommers. You know, I really loved the first few Mummy movies and, of course, Van Helsing. So I wouldn't mind to see his take on this one either. But
what about David Lynch?
Yes.
I think that'd be an interesting take.
Let's make that happen.
So maybe. Maybe I'm not thinking far enough.
Wes Anderson.
I'm just throwing it out.
Wes Anderson's Hercules.
Oh.
Think of the oddness, the eccentricity.
Wes Anderson's anything is just a bad idea.
Is that where
idea,
his swords are on his fingers?
Quirky.
Oh, no, I was thinking of Wes.
That's Tim Burton?
No, I was going completely the Wes Craven.
Oh, jeez.
I just heard Wes and I thought Craven. I didn't even listen to the rest.
That's
of
a better movie. That I would go see. Wes Craven's Hercules, I would see that.
All right, our last film, Lucy. This is written and directed by Luc Besson, and it stars, of course, Scarlett Johansson, Morgan Freeman, and that's about the list of the names that we're all going to be familiar with. A woman accidentally caught in a dark deal turns the tables on her captors and transforms into a merciless warrior evolved beyond human logic. Brian, are you ready to get down and dirty with Lucy, or are you just going to give this one a pass?
I'm just going to give this one a pass. This looks like a horrible movie that is just getting so much hype lately, the media
press
push. Press coverage and stuff. That is just because Scarlett Johansson's in it. Morgan Freeman is his typical role that he plays.
He's playing God in this?
No, it's that Now You See Me type role where he's the smart guy. He's got to explain everything as it goes on through the movie. I don't like Scarlett Johansson as a lead action person. She hasn't sold me yet on her action. Talk all you will about Black Widow, and I'll argue with you all day because I just don't get it with her.
Okay.
I just don't. This movie really, I'll probably check it out on cable eventually, but it's not something I'm going to the big screen to watch.
It's your Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. That's what you're saying. Scott?
I'm not as down on it as Brian is. I'm actually kind of interested to see it, but I will say that I'm so tired of seeing this trailer.
Yes.
Oh, it's everywhere. I kind of wish they'd come up with another one, kind of like they did with Hercules. It got me a little more interested in it. Still, I think the story is interesting enough, and Scarlett Johansson's nice to look at. So,
I'm not gonna pay $10. I don't care how pretty she is.
It's Luc Besson.
Yeah, it's Luc Besson that's the selling point to me. It's not really her. I think, you know, the guy did The Fifth Element, and he made Mila Jovovich an action heroine. I think if anybody's going to do it, I think he can do it. So I'm willing to give it a shot. I am sick to death of the trailer. I think they're advertising it as like this big A-list movie, and it's really a B-movie, which is fine. That's what I want it to be. And people keep mocking the plot. Come on. It's meant to be stupid. It's not meant to be a high art, you know, a highly scientific plot. It's meant to be idiotic but fun. Right. And sometimes I want some fun.
It reminds me of a high energy Limitless. Remember that one with Bradley Cooper?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, to defend the people who are kind of against it as far as the plot goes, the reason I hate the trailers so much is because they constantly show that Morgan Freeman moment where he's talking about how humans only use 10% of their brain.
Yes, that's dumb.
That is terrible science. I don't know how that ever caught on amongst the culture, but it's been with us for decades, even though that is completely untrue. And I wish like hell Luc Besson, when he wrote the script, instead of going this whole, we only use 10%, but she's going to use 100, just say she's just been enhanced. You don't have to go into bad science to make this movie. You could have just said something that was completely not original, but at least just not, you know, scientifically specific.
There you go.
With the numbers, and it still would have worked.
Right. So don't use a reason that was dumb 15, 20 years ago.
Right. Make up a new dumb reason.
Right. I'm fine with that.
I think it would have worked, but I think it wouldn't have sold as well. Because that's one of those.
It is dumb science, so it's not even true.
What, that we'd only use 10% of our brain?
Yes, it's not true.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. It's one of those facts that goes around that people say, like, oh, I know this interesting fact, and that's why it sells. Because you're like, oh, I knew that. I'm going to go see a movie about it.
Oh. Let's get real.
Here we go.
Now we're going to get idiots coming up and telling us how that's science. Because I saw it in Luc Besson's movie. And no argument you have, I don't care how many, you know, Neil deGrasse Tyson articles you can throw at him, is going to convince him because, hey, Scarlett Johansson told me, and Morgan Freeman told me, and he's God. Mm-hmm. You can't argue with God.
He's God.
So I get, Justin's convinced me why this is a good argument.
All right, guys, of these three movies, which one are you most likely to head out to a theater and check out? And so it goes Hercules and Lucy. Aaron?
I'm going to go with Lucy.
All right, Brian.
I'm going with her.
It's like, do you want a kick to the nuts or a kick to the shins? Or,
I've got a better track record with The Rock, so I'm going with Hercules.
All right. And Scotty.
I'm going with Lucy.
You know, I'm going to go with Lucy as well, only because I do like Scarlett Johansson, and I want this movie to work because I want her to finally be the kind of action heroine that could lead a movie instead of playing one that's really better as a sidekick than an actual movie focus a la Black Widow. So I'm going to go with Lucy. I will definitely head out to a theater and see that and be on the review.
And Hercules, I'm hoping, will end up being a fun movie ultimately.
I'll probably check that one out too, but only after I saw Lucy first.
Well, you can listen and subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher Radio app. Give us a thumbs up if you do. And please give us a review on iTunes. We really appreciate it. It helps the show. And, you know, since we're doing it for free, that would be sweet, right? I think so. And also you can go grab our RSS feed at thehollywoodoutsider.com if you use some other podcast app. There is a new episode every Thursday, and often some little special ones.
What's this movie?
What's this movie? Each week we play ours or a listener suggested clip from a movie, and if you think you know what the clip is, email us at feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com, and the following week we'll give you a proper ho shout out. Last week's answer was Brian's pick, and it was Meatballs.
Meatballs.
Those that got it correct. Meatballs. Sandy Cokie, John Davenport, and Steve Peterson. Not many got it right.
God, so easy.
I don't know about easy, man. That was an old quote. That's an old one. But this week, it is Justin Stern. And if you think you know what this clip is, and it's a good clip, then you should let us know. Feedback.
It's pretty easy, too.
At thehollywoodoutsider.com. No, it's not. It's very hard. Very hard. Don't let him
fool you. Is that what you tell her?
You idiot. Here's your clip.
Love. You learn all the math in the verse. If you take a boat in the air that you don't love, she'll shake you up just as sure as a turn in the world. Love keeps her in the air when she ought to fall down. Tells you she's hurt before she keens. Makes her home.
Storm's getting worse.
We'll pass through it soon enough.
That was your clip. And there's some... Two of the hoes here did not get that one. So let's see what you guys
shame.
Can do. Let's see what you guys can do. It's a great clip, Justin.
Look, I'm not down with your manga anime stuff, all right? I'm just saying.
Manga anime. Let's go to the couch. We talk about TV and home video news. Looks like they locked up one of the leads for True Detective Season 2, and it's going to be Colin Farrell. Do you think that's a good choice?
Yes.
Why? Mm-hmm.
He's locked down?
Yeah, he's in talks right now. Locking it down.
The talks is not locked.
Hollywood Reporter and Variety both say he's got it, so he's got it.
Aaron, Aaron's idea of locking it up just flows from whatever person he likes or doesn't like. If they're locking it up and he doesn't like them, then it's, well, they're still in talks. It's just a rumor. If they're locking it up
Dennis
and he...
Quaid.
Exactly. It was...
Oh, if they get Dennis Quaid and True Detective, it would be the best show ever.
Dennis Quaid and Kurt Russell.
Oh, don't you fucking toy with me.
Oh, my God.
Solving crime in Canada.
I love it. I don't know why it's got to be Canada, but fine. I'll take it. Whatever you can come up with. Why Colin Farrell? Why does that work for you?
When he's got good material, he is fantastic. And when he's not so good material, he's horrible. But I like him. And he's been off the radar for a long time now. I think this is a great choice. And if the writing is as good as in the second season as it was the first season, he should be fantastic. I'm sure they're going with a different dynamic than what Woody and McConaughey had. Mm-hmm. But if he's still that kind of brooding type dark guy that whatever, I think he would work. So
He is hit or miss, and it does seem to really depend on who's directing him. I'm one of the few people who actually thought that he and Jamie Foxx were fantastic in Miami Vice. A lot of people didn't like that movie. I think it's fantastic. Colin Farrell for me has been more hit than miss, but when he misses, woof.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like he's not even swinging near the base. You know, he's just like over in the stands going.
It's like he missed and then just threw the bat and killed the child.
Well, and it helps that one of his.
Sorry. Go ahead, Scott.
And it helps that one of his hits was very recent in Saving Mr. Banks, where I love to see him. I think it's even less of the material as it is. I think we've talked about this before. Like, I've never liked him when he was like the leading guy, like the leading solo guy or whatever. Mm-hmm. And this one, he's going to be paired up with somebody. I think that'll help, even though it's not a supporting role. He's still a lead role, but not the main character himself.
Right, like a co-lead. That'll be fun.
Who do you guys want to see next to him?
Oh, I don't know. I want a woman. I don't want another dude.
Yeah?
Yeah. What?
I want a woman.
I want a woman.
That's unrealistic.
That's just your natural state, bro.
I just want a lady near me just to play with my hair.
I just want to smell her perfume.
I don't know. Honestly, I'll wait and see who they pick, because whoever I come up with, I'm sure won't compare to what they do. So they already shocked me with McConaughey and Harrelson, so I'll let them pick. Not
what
that they
woman
care.
Woman that they said was going to be a part of this.
They talked about Jessica Chastain, but that never happened. That never happened. She was never locked down.
She would have been good with Colin Farrell.
Oh, absolutely.
I think
she was in talks, but not locked down.
Exactly. Oh, okay.
It was just a rumor. She was in talks.
I didn't like her enough. All right, well, a couple of new shows debuted. Number one was The Strain, which did really well, premiered really well. Justin, tell us about The Strain.
Well, to keep this quick, The Strain is based off a trilogy of books that Guillermo del Toro and Chuck Hogan wrote about a vampire plague that gets unleashed on New York City. And I, for one, read all three books. I really thoroughly enjoyed it. And I was hoping that the TV show would be able to live up to the books, which is always hard to do, but you always kind of hope for it. And for the most part, I was really pleased with this. The premiere episode was directed by Guillermo del Toro, which, you know, immediately I think is fantastic. But really, the cast worked so well in this. The lead character is Dr. Ephraim Goodweather, who's played by a now fully head of haired Corey Stoll.
Oh, that took me out.
Remember.
That took me out.
Yeah, because he was originally, most people will probably know him from House of Cards, where in the first season he played a congressperson who was, well, he didn't have a good fate, but he was bald throughout that entire show. And to now see him with a full head of hair is kind of strange. But we've also got David Bradley, who's playing Abraham Satrakian. Some of you might remember him from probably the Harry Potter movies, mm-hmm. where he played the groundskeeper, but he's also been in a variety of other things. But it's a good cast.
Theon Greyjoy.
Yeah, this is a show with a who's who.
That's right, Theon Greyjoy. Yeah. Thank you very much.
This whole episode I was watching, every 15 seconds I was like, who's that? I know that guy. I know that guy. I know that guy. It's like full of I know that guys.
And then there's that one guy, as you mentioned, from Veronica Mars. Who looks like he's put on a
Weevil.
Couple of
pounds. Weevil.
Yeah.
Yeah. Weevil does not look good with hair at all.
No. Well, with hair and with all that fat on him, because he was, you know, a bit more buff in Veronica Mars. But
who was that? What?
Sean Astin's also in it.
Yeah. Okay. That's who I thought. That's fat who I was thinking of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mr. Samwise Gamgee from the Lord of the Rings movies. It was a really good premiere episode. I liked it a lot. My only two real kind of concerns with it. One, even though they haven't named the vampire yet that has come to New York, he looked a little too Voldemort-y with the way the cloak was kind of skulking along the ground. It reminded me of several moments from the Harry Potter movies. And in the books, Abraham Satrakian has got basically think of him as your Van Helsing. Mm-hmm. He has a history with the vampires, and he tells that history in segments throughout the books. I don't know how they're going to, or if they're going to, translate any of that into the show. I could see a whole episode being his backstory, but I really have no idea how they're going to, if they're going to. But other than that, I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I can't wait to see the next episode.
Yeah, I thought it was very good. It was very good. It surprised me because I know the source material. I read part of the first book. I didn't read the whole thing. So I kind of got the feel for what they were. And I was actually surprised they went as gory as they did. Even on FX, I was kind of surprised.
Yeah, and luckily, because Del Toro is involved, they're going to be very faithful to the books. But mm-hmm. even so, I was impressed with just how faithful to the books they were.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was longer than I thought. It was about an hour and a half pilot, which I thought I wasn't prepared for. So I guess, you know, for a minute there, I'm like, wow, I really thought this was going to end. And it's still going.
Wow, but that hour just really seemed to – they really packed a lot in that show.
Yeah. So it was good. So everybody agreed it was pretty good?
Yeah.
Yeah, I read the books also. Like Justin said, it stays pretty true to the books. I was very pleased with it. It did kind of live up – because there was a lot of a big media push here the last couple of weeks or so before this started, and I'm kind of glad it's living up to the hype.
Yeah, me too.
Especially now that Penny Dreadful has finished out its first season, it's good to get a new horror series coming along.
And I saw Extant as well as Brian. It's the new Halle Berry show on CBS, which is where you go for serialized drama. And that's aimed at octogenarians.
50.
Yeah. It is basically about an astronaut that spends 13 months in space and then comes back to Earth, finds out she's pregnant. What, you say? She was on a solo mission. Wow. Yeah. How'd she get pregnant? Well, that's a mystery. And also, her and her husband have a little robot son, and there's a little bit of mystery going on with that. And it's the whole, what happened in space, what's going on in Earth. Look, that's the brief synopsis. I actually think, Justin, you'll probably like this show. It is mm-hmm. not for me. I understood the premise, and I kind of liked what they were going for a little bit. I thought Halle Berry overacted, in my opinion. Yeah.
Her?
Yeah. There's way too much emotion going on. It seemed like she just wanted to weep in every frame. Brian, what did you think?
I've got to disagree here, because I actually was pleasantly surprised by it. Okay. She is a little bit over the top, but there was enough other stuff going on that I overlooked it. The mysteries with some of the things that go on when she kind of is up there in space versus down on Earth. Mm-hmm. The kid, I think Humanic is what they call him or something mm-hmm. like that. It's very non-CBS. And I think that's what I like about it. I think it's a minor step in the right direction that network TV has got to take if they want to survive. Because right now, as we've mentioned 100 times before, cable is blowing the door. It's just leaving them way far behind.
Yes, it is.
And they have to take drastic steps if they want to maintain their viewership. And I think this is a positive step if they stick with it. I think they ruined Under the Dome. Under the Dome should have been a season-long, a summer-long series like it was originally planned, but mm-hmm. It started getting good ratings.
They had to milk it.
They had to milk it. And I believe the last I've heard, it's suffering this summer.
Yeah.
I don't know for sure.
That's what I've heard. Yeah.
But they ruined that. And I hope this gets better from where it started. I thought it was a very positive start, and I hope it gets better. And I hope that it doesn't go the route of Jericho. That's what scares me.
Well, we'll find out. And the reason I said that you'd like this, Justin, I actually don't think this is a bad show. It's just, I think it's more sci-fi than I care for. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, it's very Fringe.
I don't know what you mean.
What's that?
Because that makes no sense.
Does not compute.
It's, yeah. That's why, that's exactly why I think you'll like it. It's definitely up your alley. There's a lot of Kubrickian touches to it. I don't know. I don't think it's a bad show.
You can say Kubrickian, but you can't say biopic.
Hey, because I like biopic. It makes me feel strong. Just check it out. I think you'll actually like it.
Well, I see it's available on CBS.com, so I'll watch it off their website. And if I like it, then I'll make sure I give it a season pass on my DVR.
And we saw 24 Live Another Day, the finale. We're just going to have a quick mention. We just finished up our 24 Live Another podcast, the final episode about the finale. So if you want like a lot of insight into what we thought about that episode and the series as a whole, go check that out. It was a very fun episode. And Brian, we don't really care what Brian thought because he wasn't as big a fan, but that's all right. Justin and I got it covered. Go listen to 24 Live Another podcast. Let's go to DVD and Blu-ray. Yeah, I'm ignoring you completely.
And you excommunicate me.
Yeah, pretty much. You're kicked out. Scott, let's go to DVD and Blu-ray.
God forbid somebody doesn't agree with
Brian, I don't understand why you're still talking. You're supposed to be back in the cage. Scott?
July 22nd, we've got six releases. First up is Heaven is For Real.
For reals?
For real. Greg Kinnear's son has a near-death experience and believes that he visited heaven. Aaron reviewed this on episode 139.
No, that is not true. His son. I saw the movie, so I know that's
Greg Kinnear's son has a near-death experience.
Well, you said it too fast. It sounded like Greg Kinnear's.
Greg Kinnear's
son. Sorry, Scott, I heard you.
Okay.
It's fine.
Has a near-death experience and believes that he visited heaven.
Sorry.
You're on it tonight, son.
Aaron reviewed this on episode 139, where he gave it a 650.
It's actually pretty good.
He also reviewed Sabotage, which stars Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sam Worthington as members
and that was not
elite DEA task force who find themselves being taken down by one by one after they rob a drug cartel safe house. That one was reviewed on episode 136, where he gave it a $3 out of 10.
Such a piece of shit. I did find out, Justin, I found out a little piece of trivia. Because you had asked way back when, why didn't they use that song in the trailer? The Beastie Boys? Beastie Boys refused to let them use it once they read the script.
Ah, come on.
Once they read the script.
That's what they said.
Wow.
But they also, I don't think they like to use let their music go with movies either. I mean, they kind of.
They did on Star Trek.
All right. Well, maybe they just didn't like it. Arnold Schwarzenegger. I don't know. There was something to do with it, Arnold Schwarzenegger being in it, too.
It was something just un-American. Because he's about as American as fucking an apple pie.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Go ahead, Scott.
Was that the apple pie or the act done to the apple pie? I wasn't sure anyway, how you worded that.
Sabotage is a movie with a lot of good actors that do shit.
Okay. Transcendence, this is about a scientist, played by Johnny Depp, whose drive for artificial intelligence takes on dangerous implications when his consciousness is uploaded into one such program. Wasn't that, like, didn't they get horribly
reviewed?
Wow,
that didn't take long to get a Blu-ray.
Yeah.
No.
Now, isn't he, like, in Joaquin Phoenix's pocket and they go around?
No, that was her. But.
Yeah, thank you. That was a joke.
Yeah.
Apparently was, not a good one.
It sure
was.
No,
sorry, man. No. You swung a missed on that one.
Yeah. I'll own it up.
Yeah, Colin Farrell. That's what that was.
Is Transcendence the like the new Lawnmower Man?
How many times are you going to make this joke, Brian? How many times?
Did I say this one before?
Yes, you did. Yes, like four times.
All right. Edit it out.
No. Fuck you, asshole. Go ahead.
Speaking of movies that came to DVD and Blu-ray very quickly, Dom Hemingway is about...
I do want to see that, though.
I do, too. It seemed like I just saw the trailer in the theater, though. After spending 12 years in prison for keeping his mouth shut, notorious safecracker Dom Hemingway, played by Jude Law, is back on the streets of London looking to collect what he's owed. Next is Blue Rain. A mysterious outsider's quiet life has turned...
Blue Ruin.
I'm sorry, what did I say?
Blue Rain.
Oh, wow. I'm sorry.
It's all right. It's perfect.
which was part of the Black Rain, so it completes a trilogy.
Purple Rain. I apologize.
But
Blue
actually,
Rain.
No, I know you got to read, like, you kind of got to take into account Aaron's typos. So I don't blame
you
too
much.
It's
my fault he got it completely fucking wrong. All right.
Yeah, but he probably thought you misspelled it.
Yeah,
he was
actually.
Trying to save
you. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, Quentin. Your flaws.
Let's ignore the fact that he has to look it up to actually say what the synopsis is, but okay. All right.
Blue Ruin. I've never heard of this movie
before. Hey, whatever.
You know the synopsis by heart?
Says the guy that typed Quentin Tarantino.
Hey, I know what I'm going to say. I don't need to read it correctly. Obviously.
I'm not Ron Burgundy.
Do you guys want to hear about this movie or no?
Not anymore.
No. All right. Really, go on. Lastly, Cesar Chavez. It's a
Cesar?
Bike. Cesar?
Cesar.
Cesar?
Yeah.
Cesar Chavez.
What is Cesar?
Cesar. Quasidart?
Cesar.
Anyway,
ain't
go
that
ahead.
A surgery you have, like, whenever you're pregnant?
It's a biography of the civil rights activist.
No, that's Calogero.
Fuck, I give up.
Oh, that's right. Kind of like that, well, like that stripper I saw that had that Calogero scar under her belly button.
I'm so sorry, Scott.
Cesar Chavez. It's a biography of the civil rights activist and labor organizer by the same name. And that's it.
I reviewed that one.
You did?
Yeah, gave it $6.
Scott's like, I'm so glad to be done with this.
Let's go to the topic. Let's go to From the Outside In. We're talking action heroines. We are always talking about these manly men running around, saving the world. But that culture has really changed over the last decade or so. we've had quite a few ass-kicking women on our movie and TV screens that we honestly just haven't talked enough about. So we're going to do that this week. That's our topic. You know, it wasn't too long ago where guys would be sitting around yammering and saying things like, but she's just a girl. I'm sure we've all done that at some point, whether you want to admit it or not. But now we have Scarlett Johansson. Believe it or not, she counts, Brian. Jennifer Garner, Angelina Jolie, Yvonne Strahovski, and a lot of other women that are just kicking those barriers down. I want to know, what do you think changed?
Well, the older generations that never would have allowed a pretty lady to get her hands dirty in a fight.
Well, she's going
to
make a sandwich.
Right. She's got to, you know, be knocked up and making me a sandwich.
I just got to do my laundry before I get home from work.
Exactly.
Where's my dinner?
That generation is dying off, and they're getting older, and us youngerins that are coming up, you know, we're, because of comic books being filled with heroic women and, you know, video games being filled with them, and all so many other segments of our culture developing these strong women characters, it only makes sense that, you know, the film industry would catch on with that and really bring us a lot of really good, strong heroines. And I think the charge in some ways has actually been led by television. You know, you mentioned Jennifer Garner. You know, when she was an Alias, she kicked a lot of ass.
Yes, she did.
And that show is like 15 years old now, I think, when it first started. You got Yvonne Strahovski, who was fantastic in Chuck. Jessica Alba, when she was in Dark Angel, you know, I really hated when that show didn't get a third season because I thought it was really strong.
She was actually very good in that.
Yeah. And she was actually very good in it. Yes. Yeah, since then, not so much. But her, what brought her to fame, Dark Angel, was a really good TV show, and she was good in it. And I think that television kind of helped set the stage, pardon the pun, for the film industry to come in and start doing the same, you know, with Kate Beckinsale and you know, you mentioned Jennifer, Angelina Jolie, Scarlett Johansson. There are a lot of women out there on screens kicking butt, and I think it's a great thing.
I think that as a society, we're slowly getting towards the point where we start looking at people as people instead of...
Like we should.
Right, instead of men and women. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like we're always like looking up that, like, two different groups of people. They're just people. I think you told me a long time ago that, like, the word actress was actually made up. They were all actors at one point, mm-hmm. and then they had to differentiate it for whatever reason. And I feel like we're almost going back to that, where we can get to the point where we're calling them actors.
That's what they should be called.
Altogether, instead of actors and actresses. I think that'll mess up the Oscars a little bit. But
that'll probably never change, because that's a historic thing or whatever. But... And plus, it separates. It gives it a little bit more competition, mm-hmm. you know, whatever.
Well, they're going to be female act, you know, best male actor, best female actor.
Which is fine. And that's how I think it should be, because I don't think it should be a different word, because they're acting, so they should just be actors. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is people pay for it, and they started watching it. You know, once that happens, that's when Hollywood starts paying attention. Mm-hmm. You know, I guess before I get into my whole analogy, I wonder how much of it has to do with single-parent households. I know, and stay with me for a second.
No, I get you.
Because for decades and decades and decades, nobody ever got divorced. They always had the mom and the dad, and they had that culture where dad was a breadwinner, mom stayed at home. So they kind of saw mom as this very demure, making dinner, making sandwiches, that whole thing. And then around the late 70s, early 80s, when, you know, ladies...
Women got liberated.
When they got liberated and said, I want to make your own damn sandwich. And, you know, moms were with the kids a lot more, and people started seeing their moms as stronger people because, you know, you have that breadwinner wall taken away, and you realize mom can do just as much as dad can do, and it kind of grows from there. And I'm saying that because I grew up in that culture. So for me, that's how I felt. You know, I kind of felt like, well, mom does more than dad all the time, so I don't really know what the difference is. So I never had that in my head. Mm-hmm. And I wonder how many other people grew up that way, so maybe that's part of why that culture's changing too. Does that make sense to anybody, or is that just in my head?
Absolutely.
Huh? Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah, totally in your head.
And ultimately, it comes down to what people are going to pay for and watch. And Tomb Raider made money, and people watched Alias and Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and they watched all these shows where women kicked ass. Continuum is a huge hit. You know, you've got all this stuff that continues to grow and grow and grow. And it, Ripley started it. Sarah Connor kind of added to it, but really it hasn't been popular until about the last 10 years.
And I think we hit a stride where girl power, and I don't mean that in a negative way whatsoever. I mean that in a positive way, became a popular thing. Mm-hmm. You had movies like Girl Fight and movies that centered around even like Enough with
Jennifer Lopez.
Ooh. Where it's, you know, women taking a stand for and believing who they are kind of thing.
She just beat the snot out of that dude.
Yeah.
I actually like that. The movie was kind of dumb fun. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, historically, male heroes have been presented as a square-jawed, no-nonsense SOBs who save the world fully clothed, or they have their, like, you know, their gun show on full display. While women always have to be half-naked, running around, and emotional.
Their armor only comes to nipple, yeah. And then they're just bare.
Yeah, you got a guy who's basically in full camo, and she's got her boobs pushed up, and yeah.
I mean, there's always the occasional Conan, you know, where Arnold Schwarzenegger he was pretty scantily clad in that one, but that's not the norm, no.
No, it's not, and it's a very unfair stereotype, I think. Not that, hey, I'm not complaining. A lot of the times I enjoy it, I'm not saying that, but it is kind of an unfair stereotype. Do you think we're finally getting away from that, Brian?
Yeah, especially nowadays, I think we're seeing a lot of stereotypes, those walls being broken down, whether it's race, sexual preference, gender, you know, and it just, I think they're all coming down. And in some ways, I mean, in a lot of ways, it's almost a necessity for Hollywood because it really opens up more material so they can hopefully have more original material. But something that really has been around for a long time, though, I mean, more than just the last 10 years. I mean, you know, 90s, we saw a lot of, you know, a lot of strong female leads, or maybe not quite the lead, but maybe a strong character in it. I mean, and even now you've got like Extant. I think Halle Berry is a strong lead in that. I know she's over at the top at times, but I was compelled by her. I mean, you've even got, on some of the smaller channels like TNT, you've got that Rizzoli and Isles, which is on its second or third season by now. Mm-hmm. You know, Kira Sedgwick had that show on their same channel that was 6 or 7 years running.
The Closer.
The Closer.
Yeah, they've had more and more lately. I mean, they had Cagney and Lacey in the 80s and stuff. They've had little hits here and there, but it's really prevalent now. I mean, it's prominent. It's all over the place.
Yeah, I think...
We're not really talking lead females. I think with this, we're talking more action females.
Yeah, action women.
And Cagney Lacey, not take nothing away from them. They probably didn't kick a lot of ass.
No.
They probably chased it and then maybe shot it or whatever. But I don't know if they were chop-socking their way through the bad guys.
They weren't the A-team.
No. For a more recent example, look at Edge of Tomorrow that had Emily Blunt. She was in armor, full body armor, almost the entire movie. And she's a pretty girl. Mm-hmm. And there was never any with her stripped down. She did do the little exercise thing on, I guess, didn't she? Mm-hmm. But for the majority of that movie, she was bulked up. I mean, she was fully covered.
Yeah, it had nothing to do with her sensuality or sexuality.
Right.
Yeah, and I guess I see it that I don't mind it so much in movies where the male heroes are wearing next. If they're wearing just as little clothes, okay. But if she's running around in stilettos and she's half naked and he's fully clothed, that irritates me. It actually kind of pisses me off. Because you know what's sexy to me is not doing all that. Like Emily Blunt, I found incredibly sexy. Mm-hmm. Because she was what I want somebody who's tough. Not just a tough woman. Somebody tough to be.
But see, then you get...
That's almost like hypocritical in a way, to where she shouldn't be a sex object.
She's not
portrayed that way. But you said it, you find that sexy when she's not being sexy. So therefore she's a sex object. And it shouldn't be that way. She should just be another actor.
But see,
He finds her lack of being shown as a sex object to be in its own way appealing.
Thank you.
It's the whole thing of like, is a naked woman as sexy as a woman in a bikini? I don't know, because of the bikini, it's that mystery that creates sometimes more sensuality than just the naked truth of who someone is. Is that maybe what you're kind of talking about?
Yes.
But, you know, when you look at the Avengers and say, look at Black Widow, for the most part, that outfit is not a very sexy outfit. I mean, I don't think her butt would look terrible, even if she was just wearing a burlap sack. Mm-mm. But it's not a scanty outfit. It's not, to me, it's not a sexy outfit. It's a utilitarian outfit that she wears. And that's great. I'm really glad that she's not being put out there as a pinup doll. But let's not take away, though, say like Ava Green in 300 Rise of an Empire. There are moments in that movie where she is incredibly sexy, but I think that's she's using her appeal that men just almost can't help but fall under as a tool and as a weapon against men. And so she's using her sexuality in a way that makes her even fucking stronger and more powerful of a character. Mm-hmm. So sometimes sex can really work for a heroine, but I am glad that we're shifting to a day that it's the exception and more the rule. Mm-hmm. I'm sure Wonder Woman and the upcoming Batman versus Superman is not going to look like Wonder Woman that Linda Carter played, you know, back in the 70s. Granted, she looked great, but that age is done, and I'm glad for that.
I am too. Now, let's get into the actresses we like and don't like. What actress, first of all, do you think has been the worst to attempt being an action heroine?
Well, we already mentioned her, but Halle Berry as Catwoman.
Oh, God! Yeah.
Oh, shit, you went there.
And Storm, for that matter.
Oh, yeah. Man. But at least the Storm, it was more her acting that was bad.
Right.
She was just bad at action. And
that, I mean, Catwoman is universally known as one of a really terrible film anyway, but
it's fun if you're drunk, man.
It's just painful to watch. There's like a scene where she's playing basketball with some dude and it's terrible. But to me, the character Catwoman, at least from what I had seen from the old television shows and the movies, and Catwoman was always sexy.
But see, that's part of her character. Yeah, I'm okay with that.
I'm okay with that, too, but I don't know, the way that they did it in the movie, like, she was obviously more revealing and, like, had rips in her leather and that kind of stuff.
There's no reason for cleavage.
Yeah, there really wasn't, and it just really, really bothered me, and I could not stand her in that movie.
Okay, well, my pick is Drew Barrymore in Charlie's Angels. Now, don't get me wrong. I like Charlie's Angels. I actually like the movie. And Sam, what's his name? Sam
Rockwell.
Rockwell was so good in that movie. And I actually think Cameron Diaz was great in that movie too. But Drew Barrymore, I'm convinced the only reason she got that job was because she produced it. Because she does not look good in a fight. She looks ridiculous. She looks like she's lost and she's having a spat on a playground or something. It looks horrible. And stop it. Just stop it.
It's a good call.
Brian?
I can't believe nobody's mentioned this. Pamela Anderson.
Oh, barbed wire.
Barbed wire?
Barbed wire. Exactly.
Oh, shit.
Oh, it's so bad.
If you haven't seen it, this is the actual description from IMDb. And I quote, post-apocalyptic remake of Casablanca set in a strip club. That should say it all, right?
Sounds about right. Yeah, I like it.
Interesting little. One of the actors in there, one of the supporting actors, was Jango Fett from the newer Star Wars movies.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I do have to say, though, she was married to Tommy Lee
when
she did this movie. And he did a song for that movie called Welcome to Planet Boom. That's a kick-ass song.
It's too bad it was in such a kick.
It was a
movie.
Shit film, but that was a kick-ass song.
Awful movie. What about you, Justin? What do you got?
Who's I'm doubling worst? Down on you. To me, it's a tie with Drew Barrymore and Cameron Diaz. The action that they tried to create in those Charlie's Angels movies was terrible. At least Lucy Liu looked believable.
She did.
She was the one angel that I could go, all right, yeah, she's probably kicking some ass. Those other two were
because
awful.
Because she's Asian,
no, because
she can
actually
pull off
knows
the
martial arts.
Yeah, she actually kicks somebody's ass.
She actually knows it.
She didn't look like, wait, what do I do? So I turn, twirl here,
I'm like, then, what? Where's my cleavage? Where's the camera playing?
She looks like she was
about sexualizing your female characters.
Oh, Lord.
I mean, they were nothing but cleavage and butt in that movie. Both of them, actually. But they were terrible at action. Thank God I don't think either of them have tried it again. I think as close as Cameron Diaz has gotten was that Night and Day
where she just,
movie, but yeah. She was not even an action element of it. She was the damsel.
She was the set piece, really. Right. It's like, here, cruise, move her around the room, and then do what you got to do.
That's yeah, so McGee, woof.
Oh, man.
You know, stunk.
The first one was actually kind of a fun movie, but the action was just not good. Yeah. Some people just don't belong there. But let's go to the ones that do. Who are your top three favorite film or TV heroines? You can pick either one from any of them, but you only get three. Number three first.
I'm going with Katniss.
Everdeen, all right.
Katniss Everdeen from The Hunger Games and Catching Fire. I really enjoyed the books a lot, and I was really hoping that the movies would be nearly as good. The first film was fairly good, but the second film was outstanding, and a large part of that is due to Jennifer Lawrence, her ability to play this character who is such a great action heroine, yet so antithetical to that in so many other ways. And she's also not sexed up in all of her outfits. And she's a believable person in this unbelievable circumstance. And I bought it hook, line, sinker, and I think she's a great role model for girls of today to kind of look to. You know, you don't have to have a special mutant ability to be a hero. Mm-hmm. Just a bow and an arrow.
I like it. Brian?
my pick is somebody that if I worked with this girl, I would probably be talking about how much of a bitch she is behind her back.
Okay.
But watching her on TV, she's snarky. She's funny in a different way. And she really doesn't take any shit off of anybody, even Jack Bauer. And that's Chloe O'Brien.
Oh, okay.
Love me some Chloe.
She's had some action scenes. So I yep. she passes. I like it. Yep. My number three is it's probably almost a forgotten movie at this point. But I love her in this movie. I thought she did a fantastic job. Always wanted it to be a series. Actually, one of our listeners mentioned it too. Angelina Jolie as Evelyn Salt. Ooh. I really liked Salt, and she kicked the shit out of everyone in that movie, and she was better than Jason Bourne, I thought. So I always wanted them to continue that franchise. Never happened. Man, I really liked her in that role.
That's a good call, because, I mean, and you could just really, Angelina Jolie is just about any of, between that, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, I love that movie.
Mm-hmm.
Wanted, I mean, she's a good call.
She is. She's got it covered.
My number three is an easy pick. Linda Hamilton as Sarah Connor in Terminator 2, especially because coming off of the original Terminator where she played a completely different character.
Oh, yeah, that was true, yeah.
You know, she was a waitress and very unsure of herself and scared of everything. And then the opening scenes in Terminator 2 when she was, you know, doing pull-ups and was just all buffed out. And
she's still more ripped than you, yeah.
Seriously, I loved watching her, and she felt so earnest in everything she did. I really enjoyed watching her.
Number two, Justin.
Princess Leia.
Aww.
I mean, in the original Star Wars trilogy, from almost the very first second she's on screen, she is in command. She is the one who's given the orders. She is tough as nails, and that really doesn't change throughout the films. And I really can't wait to see what Abrams is able to do with her and that character. But in those three movies, she was a badass chick. She totally owned who she was and didn't need any, you know, any, well, she did need saving once.
Mm-hmm.
But even in when they were saving her, she was the one doing most of the decision making and got them out of hot water.
Whatever. All I hear is, help me, Obi-Wan. You're our only hope.
No. Nope.
Help me. Help
She's
me,
the one who grabs the gun, shoots the grate out, and says, come
and
on.
Kisses her brother.
She didn't know. It'll count.
The chemistry was palpable. Wow. Brian, what's your number two? Before you make Justin stab you.
Ellen Ripley from Alien movies.
It's hard to go wrong with that one. Yeah.
Just like you said, or, you know, back in the I mean, did it come out in the late 70s or was it
actually 79, 80.
Still, to have it that strong of a lead be a female was very not common.
Yes, so, absolutely.
And to really pull off, just, I mean, not only a lead like that, but just the fact that she was so physical was just awesome. And for at least the first couple of movies, she really owned it and was a big fan. So
my number two, Summer Glau as River in Firefly and Serenity.
Miss Forehead.
Hey, she kicked a lot of ass. I always found her extremely interesting. She's engaging. And I think she has the advantage because I was able to watch her in a series. So I got to grow with her character a little bit more than I did with, because I don't connect as much with Ripley. Ripley, to me, she's got the one movie where she's a badass, and the rest of them, she's kind of not as much. But I really like Summer Glau in that performance. I think she's somebody that could have went a lot further than she ended up going in her career, but, you know, there's still time. She's young. Scotty?
Wait a minute. I just want to get this clear. She doesn't work. Ellen Ripley doesn't work for you because she was good in the one movie, but not in the others. But Summer Glau.
She never really resonated with me. I mean, she was kind of badass, but I'm one of the few people that it doesn't work for me.
Okay.
I thought Summer Glau was great in Terminator: The Sarah Connor Chronicles.
And I should, she was. And I should reiterate, she works for me. I like the character. She just wouldn't make my top three.
How's gotcha. That? My number two is echoing Justin's Jennifer Lawrence's Katniss Everdeen in The Hunger Games. For me, she's a great action heroine, female action heroine, because she does the action stuff so well, but she's also very believable as a human character. You know, it's not so over the top that, you know, I mean, I love Ripley too and the others we've talked about, but you really believed her and felt for her plight that she was going through and this horrible thing that she was experiencing. And a lot of that was because of Jennifer Lawrence's performance. I really found her entertaining to watch on screen.
Nicely said, sir. Number one, who's your favorite film or TV heroine? You know, there can only be one. Justin?
Well, you already mentioned it. It's Buffy. Aww. 7 seasons of Buffy kicking vampire, werewolf, ghost, demon, whatever's ass across my TV screen. She died twice and came back. Not a lot of people can say that. She's just a fantastic character. You know, half because of Joss Whedon's dialogue for her and half because of Sarah Michelle Gellar just really playing that character to the hilt. And for me, she's just my favorite female hero of all time because she sacrificed her life for others, was brought back and had to do it again. She was always ready to take on the big bad, and I gotta love her. And while I'm sure Aaron will cut this out, I do have an honorable mention of Lynn Collins and John Carter. She played Deja Thoris. She's probably the strongest female character I think I've ever seen in a movie. And even now, I think when I think that movie, I don't think Taylor Kitsch. I think her.
See, the longer you talk, the more likely it is I cut it out. So if you do it in like a couple seconds, you never know. Could stay.
Lynn Collins is awesome.
Brian?
Gina Carano. No, just kidding. Sorry, I couldn't even pause long enough to even like let that one sink in for a second. Probably going out in left field with this one, but I'm going to say Hermione Granger.
Really?
Yeah, right.
That's not a bad pick.
And I've got a reason for this. I found this little thing online that somebody wrote up about why she's such a badass. So bear with me one second here. They say, let's see, you realize that Hermione Granger lit a teacher on fire when she was 11, kept a person alive in a jar for a year when she was 14, studies the dark and forbidden magics for kicks, and is one of the brightest, strongest witches of her era. She also punched Draco Malfoy in the nose for being an idiot. Let's see. She literally pulled a Bourne identity on her parents and managed to set them up in fucking Australia. She even made it to where she never even existed, convinced the Ministry of Magic to give her an incredibly dangerous and volatile device that allowed her to alter timelines completely. And there's way more stuff. She actually figured out Voldemort's plan before even Voldemort does. So, I mean, she's pretty much a badass. And pretty much way more of a badass than Harry Potter, who...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know.
Who did nothing until the last movie. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You mentioned earlier, Brian, someone that if you worked with them, you'd say they were a raging bitch. That's what I think of when I think of Hermione Granger.
Seriously? I like Hermione Granger.
I do too. She's just
missing. No, I like her, but
I never saw her that way. You shut up.
All the purebloods are too busy looking down on her because she's a mudblood.
Yeah, she's whatever she is.
Muggle?
No, muggles have no magic. She's a magic child of muggles, making her a mudblood.
My number one, you know, it kind of speaks to what you were talking about with Katniss. And I think everybody thinks because I'm a Jennifer Lawrence fan, it's going to be Katniss. It's not. Mm-hmm. But when you were talking about Katniss, you talked about the humanity meshing with the action. And this is kind of why I picked her, is Uma Thurman as the bride in Kill Bill.
It's a good call.
Because through those two films, she runs the emotional gamut of someone that, you know, from peaks and valleys. And also every fighting scene she's in, I believe every single second of it. Mm-hmm. I truly to this day think Uma Thurman could come in my house and kill everyone with a samurai sword. I have no doubts. So to me,
there's like two of you.
Yeah. Well, she could still
It wouldn't be like killing the crazy 88s. I mean, it wouldn't be that dramatic.
That's what I'm saying. It'd be a lot quicker. Me and my neighbors. We had a huge party. She could come in and wipe us all out. How's that?
All right. Fair enough.
Okay. You and 87 of your friends?
Myself and 87 friends. And Uma Thurman came over, which is a bad call by me for inviting her when there's 88 people here. Obviously, it's a bad sign.
I just like how good you're feeling about yourself today that you think you got 87 friends.
On Facebook.
Yeah. Does that count? Those are real friends. Scott, what's your number one?
My number one was also taken, but Sigourney Weaver, Ellen Ripley. She's kind of like the one that started it all to me. I don't know. I mean, I didn't see a whole lot of movies before that. But the thing I particularly like about her in that movie is that even though she was the first build cast when you look at that movie, she wasn't the lead until much further into the movie. It was about all of them. And then when they all got killed off and she was it, all of a sudden now she's the lead. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And she did that very, very well. I kind of agree with you that in the later movies, especially in the fourth one, it got ridiculous. And
she's throwing basketballs over her shoulders and dunking them?
Yeah. But I still like Alien 3 quite a bit. I get a lot of flack for that.
I think Alien 3 is a very good movie.
No, you shouldn't. It gets undue shit.
That's one people should go revisit because it actually is a very smart story.
Mm-hmm. She's just a lot of fun to watch and a lot of fun to cheer for, which is what you should do want to do in a heroine.
So,
which one was it? Was that the one they were in the prison?
Yep. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
It's a little darker, but go revisit it. What do our listeners think?
Well, first off, we've got Action Girl Books, who says, would have to be Ellen Ripley from the Aliens series, tough and without sex appeal, being used to see a female lead.
Isaiah says, TV heroine has to be Sarah Michelle Gellar as Buffy. I always found her to be cool, one of the guys, kind of chick, and she kicked butt.
Tammy says, Evelyn Salt, always wished that series continued. Well, can you call it a series since it was just one?
We can, Tammy.
I ain't no math major. But.
Amy Hutchison says, some good ones are mentioned, Veronica Mars, Hermione Granger.
How did I forget Veronica Mars?
You sure did, but go ahead.
Holy crap.
Scared me.
I've been biting my tongue this whole time and just laughing on the inside at you fucking losers.
Amy continues and says, a recent for me honorable mention would have to be Sharni Vinson, in parentheses Aaron, in Your Next. What a freaking badass. She made the whole movie.
She was so good. So good. Yep.
Scotch says Mila Jovovich as Lilu in The Fifth Element. Innocent, charming, and completely badass. Great combination.
Multipass.
Paula Sell says Celine, Kate Beckinsale, and Underworld. Yep. The first one.
Nice pick.
Craig Schermerhorn says Zoe from Firefly/Serenity. Michelle Yeoh and honestly, Summer Glau killed the action scenes in Serenity. But that was about the extent of it for her. Scarlett Johansson has to be mentioned for Black Widow. How can you not?
Because she sucks.
I knew Brian was going to get in there.
Josh Steinman says, Mila Jovovich as Alice. Not all of the Resident Evil flicks are good, but she kicks ass in all of them regardless.
Robert John Davenport says, I really enjoyed Hannah. The movie was shot well in Ciorci. I forget how you pronounce her name. Ronan was just amazing in the role. though a highly unbelievable concept, the movie really did the very best it could to make me suspend all disbelief and buy into it. I don't think any other actress would have been able to make Hannah as real and powerful as Cersei did. And I'm so sorry if I'm mispronouncing her name.
Peter Germany says Linda Hamilton as Sarah Connor in Terminator 2, and Sarah Michelle Gellar as Buffy.
Buffy! David McGrath says, as far as movies go, Mulan and Princess Leia. And as far as TV goes, Arya Stark and Uhura from Star Trek.
Ooh, Uhura. There you go.
Good calls.
I don't know if she did a lot of action, but she got some.
She tapped that earpiece a hell of a lot.
She sure did.
I got to say, I think Sansa Stark is more... Yeah, she doesn't wield a sword, but in her own way, she's stronger.
No, she had one episode where she was strong, and for 3.9 years before that, she's not been.
Let's not have this. Come on.
All right, go. I think,
go.
Angela Lee says television, Buffy, Veronica Mars, and Captain Janeway. Film, San from Princess Mononoke, and Katniss and Hermione Granger.
Mononoke.
Oh, did I say Mononoke? Yeah, you're right, Mononoke.
Steve Peterson says, the first that comes to mind is Hayley Stark, Ellen Page, in Hard Candy. Oh, that's a good call.
Yeah, that's good.
Super clever, completely ruthless, and just plain evil, but for good reason. I really love everything about that movie. Second is Marge Gunderson, Frances McDormand, in Fargo. Something about solving the crime and taking down the bad guy while being overly polite and pregnant just screams badass. That's a really good point.
Don't you know?
Paul Hanahan says the OG, Ellen Ripley.
Hell yeah.
The OG.
And David Kramer, echoing Brian, saying Chloe O'Brien. Yeah, I'm kind of shocked nobody said Hit Girl.
Oh, yeah.
She was on my top five, but it didn't pan out. Sorry. Veronica Mars was never on my list, so it didn't really devastate. She doesn't.
But she was a real, she wasn't an action heroine. She wasn't an action heroine. She was really so smart. I mean, she didn't need to get action-y because she just outthink you. But...
She didn't need to get action-y.
Nope.
remember, guys, you can email us if you go to feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com and find us on facebook.com/thehollywoodoutsider. Those that like us, we'll mention you on the show. This past week, Stephanie Navarro, Nicole Stokes Armstead, Percy Gutierrez, Eunice Cordero, Patty Steph Thompson Long. What are you guys just adding names so you can try to mess me up or what? Linda Lamb.
Like everything you read is in your Puss in Boots voice.
Linda Lamb Thompson, Debbie Creek Atwood, Tim Modic.
What are you, Russian?
I'm trying different accents. Claire Larson, Sharon Ogdi, Shirley Griman, Teresa Ewalt Chef. So thank you for liking us. We also have a Facebook group. Be sure to check that out. There's a link in the show notes. I'm just going to keep talking right over you bitches. I'm not even going to pretend like you're here. You can always find us at thehollywoodoutsider.com. We're on Twitter,
Bitch cowboys.
I never saw Star Wars.
You can leave us a message or text us, 818-814-6246. Listen and subscribe for free on iTunes. Listen on your Stitcher Radio app. I'm getting through this without you. I don't care. Or through our RSS feed.
No problem.
That's going to do it for this episode of The Hollywood Outsider. Thanks to Justin, Brian, and Scott for being here. Thanks, guys. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Brian.
You're welcome.
Glad I could help.
Pull lever.
Remember, guys, the next time you go to a theater, buy popcorn.
Call Lev. Top three. We go 3, 2, 1, or was that round robin? Is that like...
Was this Lethal Weapon all of a sudden?
So I'll say all three of my choices at the same time.
No. 3, then 2, then 1.
1 plus 2 plus 1, one plus 2.
2 plus 1.
Aaron's already seen it. I assume Brian doesn't want to see it, but if I can get it to you, you can have it. I'm gonna purchase it again on.
Don't be making iTunes. Assumptions.
Don't
on
be all stereotyping my ass down here.
Fuck, they play video games. They just got that one called The Wheel. Who can keep up with your anger? God, get a fucking chair.
We need to put a collection together.
I would recommend like one of those like hanging hammock type chairs.
Oh, that'd be nice.
There's no hardware to squeak with them.
He's just swinging into the microphone like Tarzan every now and again.
doubles as a spin fuck chair.
Ooh, don't
toy balls with dangling me through the holes in the neck.
Jesus. What's so special about it? Is it?
I don't know. Justin just saw collectible and he's like, "Fuck, need it."
Yep, pretty much.
What, you're starting now? I mean, it's usually like a little bit later.
No, that's because you're usually late. Let's do this.
Flash Gordon, quarterback, New York Jets.
That's right.